There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Fighting on Film podcast, the podcast all about classic and obscure war movies, from the Normandy landings to the days of chivalry and swords. If it's been captured on film, we're going to try and cover it. I'm Robbie, of RM Military History.
I'm Matthew Moss, of Historical Firearms and the Armourer's Bench.
Hello, welcome back to Fighting on Film. Now, hot off of the back of our interview with Del Dye, and thanks everyone so much for your reviews,
reaction,
your messages.
That was amazing.
Reaction was incredible. We really hope that you enjoyed it. If you haven't listened yet, please go away and listen to that episode, because we absolutely loved it. It's incredible talking war films with one of the greats. But this week we have a relatively new film, came out in April, and it's just been released in the UK here in the last couple of weeks. And it is Guy Ritchie's The Covenant. And you have to say Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, because there's a 2006 film called The Covenant, and God forbid you get it confused with
I haven't seen it. Another film. Didn't know what it was.
No, neither had I. But I think
it's got the guy from the Expanse in it.
Oh, okay, right.
Which I do rate The Expanse, but yeah,
this one definitely doesn't. So this one stars Jake Gyllenhaal, but Matt's on cast, so we won't go too far ahead. And I'm on production this week, so maybe we should do production first, then go on to the cast. So it's produced by STX Films and Toff Guy Films, which is Guy Ritchie's own production company. STX recently released Devotion and Operation Fortune, which was another Guy Ritchie movie that was previous to this one. Distributed by MGM, who were recently acquired by Amazon. And internationally, the film was released by Amazon on their Prime streaming service. But it was released theatrically in the US, and it released on April the 21st. And then in early June here in the UK and other markets. It's just directed by Guy Ritchie, who's obviously, you know, big British director, known for his 1998 smash hit Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. He's known, you know, 2000 Snatch. More recently, he directed the Man from U.N.C.L.E. reboot in 2015. I know Matt enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Not bad.
Not bad, yeah. And The Gentleman in 2019, which was a bit of a return to form for him. More of
getting
more
a series
kind of
as well,
stock.
I believe.
Yeah, yeah. And then his next feature will be His next feature will be a Second World War film called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which is based on Damien Lewis's book of the same name.
It remains to be seen what that kind of the tone of that's going to be, because the imagery that's come out so far is interesting.
Looks very Snatch, very Lock, Stock, very gentleman type stuff, I think, from what I've seen. But it's yet to be seen, yeah, because this film doesn't do any of the Guy Ritchie tropes that we sort of know. It kind of does them, but doesn't go in as hard.
No,
as other projects.
There is some violin music in there, which is a recent Ritchie motif.
Yeah, there's naming of characters coming up on the screen as well, but we'll get into that later, because it's a trope that I really don't like. Anyway, so the And recently, more of Ritchie's projects have been bought for streaming by Amazon. So the Operation Fortune film that starred, was it Wrath of Man? It might have been Wrath of Man that didn't get a UK release here, but it was released on streaming. Remember that being quite a big thing. It was written by Ritchie himself and Ivan Atkinson and Marne Davies, who are frequent collaborators with Ritchie. They helped write Wrath of Man, The Gentleman, Operation Fortune, like basically most of Ritchie's, you know, really recent projects. The cinematography was by Ed Wild. He's a British DOP and cinematographer. His credits include London Has Fallen, Severance, Black Mirror, Halo TV series. Okay. I think it's competent camera work. I don't think it's pulling up
any
trees.
There are some nice shots in there. Talk about that later on, but there are a few that are quite good. But yeah,
there are a few, but I think for me, by and large, it's pretty okay, you know. And then the music's by Christopher Barnstead, as another frequent Ritchie collaborator, composer soundtracks to The Gentleman, Operation Fortune. Because I sound like I'm repeating myself a lot, but this is the way it is, folks. And he will compose the soundtrack.
Sorry, that was a heat yawn, not what you were saying.
No, it's fine. It's very warm. And he will compose the soundtrack of The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Again, I think it's fine. The score's absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yep. Yep.
Mentioned top of the show, called Guy Ritchie's Covenant in many markets, not to be mistaken for the 2006 film, but the working title was The Interpreter. I think that's a better name, personally.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
I think it's far more like down the line, tells you exactly what you need to know about the movie. Mm. The budget was $55 million, shockingly low for something like this. I was shocked when I found that out. I thought for the names involved and the cast, I thought it would be at least double. Not very big movie at all, but box off budget wise. But the box office at the moment is just shy of 19 million, so it's probably considered a bit of a flop. But
I don't know. You match that up with whatever the deal was with streaming services, perhaps it's not a flop.
That's exactly what I was just going to come in and say, because we don't know how much Amazon paid for the rights or how much certain market. You know, it's. They could have broke even already before even the film.
If you think about
it,
they already own the production company.
Yeah.
They've got Ritchie sort of signed to a deal of some sort, obviously.
It seems like it.
So they've obviously got the project, they've got the director, and it has the prefix of his name, which is going to draw people in anyway. So
yes.
I mean, that it might not be a bad deal on their part.
No, it might have broke even, might even made a little bit of a profit already, for all we know. Shot on location in Spain, with Alicante serving as key locations, filling in for Afghanistan and Afghanistan cities. You're never really sure where you are in Afghanistan in this movie, and that's another issue.
Well, it says at the beginning, Lashkargah.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then after that, not really sure. Could be anywhere. Yeah.
They do move around a bit.
Yeah, you think you'd go Kabul. You think you'd just stick with a big...
Well, they go to Bagram, don't they?
They go to Bagram Air Base. Yeah, yeah.
We're told we're in Lashkargah. He travels 120 kilometres. I don't really remember if they said where he was when they find him at the end. Spoilers. Yeah.
It's all
I don't think it
vague.
Matters, does it? Does it matter if we know where he is? Like, nothing important is going on anyway.
Oh, I just want to highlight how vague this movie can be at times. Oh my God, the vagueness. According to the film's military advisor, former US Army officer Dan Schmidt, the cast received 3 to 4 days of training with a former Green Beret. And the reviews were mixed. And this is, it's not a retro review, but I guess it's retro a couple of weeks ago. It depends on how you define retro. It's from RogerEbert.com by Robert Daniels, and he sums it up by saying, Guy Ritchie's The Covenant could have been more than a muscular overwrought war film. It could have been a revealing and controlled, thought-provoking examination of what went wrong in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, the latter is a promise that Ritchie cannot keep. We're done.
I know, right? There's some elements of the film where you can see they're trying to reach something.
Yes.
But I don't think it actually gets there, because I'll talk about it perhaps later on as well, but there's a scene where one of the team shoots an Afghan wounded prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in the last 18 months been a big deal, talking about special operations forces and the allegations of them murdering prisoners and mistreating civilians, etc. So that's a big deal, and that's a big talking point, but it's so quick. There's no repercussions because everyone on that mission dies. Spoilers. There's certain points where it's reaching to talk about something, but I don't think it hits the mark.
There's dialogue that that Gyllenhaal says near the end, and I'm like, oh, if you'd have stuck with that theme more throughout the whole movie, you know. I've got a thing in my notes for later, but I wanted it to be more Argo than Rambo. If you know what I mean. Like, there's getting someone out of a war zone, and then there's the bureaucracy behind it. I wanted more of that, because it hints on it. Anyway, we'll get to that later.
We'll talk about that later, because I have points there as well.
Mm. But the one where reviews are back with aplomb this week, and we've got a few, and as I say, they are quite mixed. As the actual reviews were, Darren Current went with Guilt, and then you and I think Matt was on the final film Twitter page. You having a lovely chat about aircraft and things like that, which is quite funny. Then Adam Christian said Owned. David Berber went with Formulaic, and he put Kinley, i.e. studio executive, why do you want this job? Ahmed, i.e. Richie, I need the money. Thought that was quite funny.
It's not one word, but yes.
No, but it was good. Jem Dudaku said solid. A few minutes of history podcast said all right. Mary Brazier said nothing repeatable in polite company. Was that a four-letter word, Mary, perhaps? Seri Thomas put night nurse, and he said that he fell asleep halfway through, which was hilarious. I put muddled. Ken Campbell went with unneeded. And David Harrison goes with entertaining. Harry Black Maskers put Yawn Fest. James Rowley went with awesome. So there was a little bit of some good, there's some good, there's some bad.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. I did fall asleep during it, but I was watching it about 3 a.m.
Oh right, well there you go then.
And I picked up the following day. But yeah.
I watched it literally the day it came out on Prime, because
I remember.
I was at my mum's. And I was just, because they've got a Prime stick, and I was like, ooh, wonder what's on Prime. And it was on the front page, and I was like, blimey, it's finally come out. Because I went, Matt knows, it's a bit of behind the scenes for your listeners, but for months, I was trying to find out a definitive UK date for this, for genuinely months, like since April drop, like it came out in the US in April. No one had a bead on it. It was bizarre. And then they just dropped it without any fanfare. It was so weird. And I don't know why.
I have a habit of doing that, though.
Mm.
Like that Chris Pratt film, the sci-fi one.
Yeah, it just kind of just came out, like, didn't it? He had a trailer and it just dropped.
And it was like, oh, okay. Now, that's a film we need to cover. Jesus.
Oh, Yesterday's War, whatever it's called.
Yeah. Or Tomorrow's or whatever.
Tomorrow's War. Tomorrow's World.
Whatever.
So that pretty much rounds out the production. It's pretty, pretty quick one this week. So, Matt, do you want to go through the cast for us?
Yeah, we've got Stephen Strait as Caleb Denvers, the main protagonist, one of the four sons of Ipswich. He attends the Spencer Academy. Oh, wait, that's Covenant 2006, Rob.
Very good. See what you did there.
Because it's so easy to do, isn't it? Just get these two films mixed up.
Have Guy Ritchie at the start.
I know, right? Yeah. So, as we've already mentioned, it's a Jake Gyllenhaal-led picture, which I don't really associate Jake Gyllenhaal as being a leading man of this type of film.
More of it lately, I think. He's done more action.
Yeah,
perhaps he's
feeling like, you know what, I'm going to do my action films while I can.
He's gone from indie to big studios. Now he's in it.
Yeah, I mean...
He does rugged well. I'll give him that.
Yeah, no, he looks good. He looks the part in the film. But I think for me... I've never really associated him with roles like this, so it's interesting. Okay. So he plays Master Sergeant John Kinley, who's a SOCOM team leader of a team that is hunting down IED manufacturers.
The vague force. They're the vague commandos.
They really are vague. He's wearing like a JTAC, which is like a forward air controller type role.
Yeah.
He's plastered with those. He's got like patches all over.
He's got ISAF on. He's got a weird Afghan commando badge at one point that I was trying to work out why he'd be wearing that, but he's not with the other Afghan commandos in his unit.
Yeah, no one else is.
It's a bit weird.
So I mean, we normally just run down people's military war movie type of roles, and I think Gyllenhaal's most recognisable would be Jarhead from 2005.
Of course, you know, breakthrough role for him. Yeah,
pretty good movie. And then the second sort of lead in this is Dar Salim, who plays Ahmed, the interpreter. He's an Iraqi-born Danish actor, actually a Danish army veteran, did his national service in the Danish army. He's been in lots of Danish and European TV and some films. He was in the Boys series, which I think is also Amazon.
Yep, that's it, yeah.
I think. He was in Black Crab in 22, which is like a thriller action-y movie. And then he was also in A War, which is the 2015 Danish war movie about Afghanistan.
You like that one, don't you? Yeah.
I did. I watched it a few years, well, a year ago, maybe a bit more. I did enjoy it. It kind of does that classic rules of engagement, sort of partially courtroom, partially flashback. He saves his men, but at the expense of killing some Afghan civilians. And there's the whole moral discussion of that and the trial and that sort of thing. It's a really interesting film. We have Emily Beecham as Caroline Kinley, John Kinley's wife. And she was in 28 Weeks Later. She has
all of like 15 lines or something, which has nothing to do.
Well, that's the majority of the cast, to be fair.
That is fair. Yeah.
She was in 28 Weeks Later in 2007, Outside the Wire, which is like a sci-fi military movie, which I think is on Netflix, in 21, lots of TV roles. Then an unusual role for Johnny Lee Miller as Major and then later Colonel Volks. He was John Major in The Crown recently. He's kind of a career resurgence, I would say. He was in a film called Regeneration in 1997, which is the only kind of military pseudo.
Yeah. He was in military. Sherlock, the American one.
He was Sherlock.
Lucy Liu, that made him big over there, didn't it?
Like, yeah, it did. Yeah. I think I only saw a couple of those, and it didn't do it for me.
No, this Johnny Lee Miller turning up, it felt like a Richie thing to have like a British character actor in there. Yeah.
Perhaps so. He's fine in the role.
Oh yeah, he's big.
I mean, his accent's okay, and he plays the role pretty well, and I mean, he doesn't have a lot to do.
The last film I saw him in was Love, Honor and Obey. Like whenever that came out, the Ray Winston like gangstery type film. One of those movies that was made because of how successful Snatch was and how successful Lockstock was. So maybe there's a little connection there. I don't know.
Maybe. Alexander Ludwig plays Sergeant Declan O'Brady, who's kind of like Volks's staff sergeant. He was in Lone Survivor as the new SEAL that arrives and has to do the rhyme and all that kind of thing. I say rhyme, it's like a little poem.
We should do Lone Survivor soon.
We should do. We should do it. It's another interesting really Afghan movie.
Interesting how fucking badly that was bungled. That was a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was also in Midway in 2019, Vikings, which is, I suppose, a pretty big show. I haven't actually watched it myself, but I know a lot of people like that show.
Yeah.
And perhaps his best war movie so far has been Operation Christmas Drop, which is a film about delivering Christmas presents. It's a rom-com, Rob. It's something like it's like a Hallmark movie where there's a Department of Defense analyst comes to audit his work, where he like delivers parcels to.
Oh my god! This is
island chains.
You're hearing it here first, folks. We're gonna do that at Christmas time, please.
No, it's dire. It's dire, Rob. It's awful. It's like someone wanted to go to like a sandals resort for Christmas.
Was it like Dumbo Drop sequel?
Yeah, but without the elephant, it was terrible. Then we got Anthony Starr, who plays Eddie Parker, who's sort of a CIA spooked sort of. Military PMC contractor type of dude, guy, exactly. He was also in The Boys, another Boys connection.
So this is the Amazon connection coming in. Mm-hmm. That's why I thought he was in it. Yeah.
Sean Saga as Jizzy. Lots of UK TV roles, including Our Girl, which is also set in Afghanistan. And recently he was in Richie's The Gentleman with a small role, I believe. Then we got Jason Wong as JJ. He was in The Gentleman as well. Star Wars Solo. He had a small background role in that, I believe. And in 2014, he was in Jarhead 2. So there's a Jarhead link too, which is interesting.
We could do Jarhead Month. There's enough of them.
There's like three now, isn't there?
Yeah. There's the most recent one is a 13 Hours at Benghazi ripoff.
No way.
Yeah,
is that the embassy one?
It's like
is that where they're in an embassy?
Yeah. You've been on Netflix recently as well, haven't you?
Yes. Netflix seems to like profiling what I should be watching.
It's like, this guy likes war movies. We've got lots of those. Maybe they're not all good, but we've definitely got them.
And then I'll just round out some of the other cast that are in here. We've got Bobby Schofield as Steve Kershaw. We've got James Nelson Joyce as Jack. We've got Reza Diaco as Hadi. Then we have Reese Yates as Tomcat. And we have Christian Ocha Lavernier as Eduardo Chow Chow Lopez.
Yeah, they've all got nicknames.
I think what happened there was, Rob, that they thought if they gave them all nicknames, we'll feel like we give a shit about them when they get killed first 5 minutes.
So early on this week, but literally that is the trope where Matt is 100% correct, where just because they've got nicknames and you've shown me their name on screen, you think I should give one toss about them. It's just like, it's so absurd to me when these guys start dropping. And it might hang on them just a little bit once they've been shot. I'm like, I don't care who Jack was or Tom,
we don't know
Dick
who they
and
are.
Harry were. No, exactly.
They
don't have any characterization. They have a beer together. That's all you get.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
There's some complaining and then there's a beer and then they're dead.
And they're all dead. Yeah.
It's basically it.
Yeah.
And on that note, let's move on to the Alley Tally.
It's time for Alley Tally on Fighting on Film.
I'll kick off this week because notably, the film used no real firearms on set. And apparently that was a choice that was made after the fatal shooting on the set of Rust in 2021 and the fallout from that, Alec Baldwin, all that type of thing.
Tragic.
So Richie told reporters while filming, he said, the whole thing has changed now. The whole game has changed. We haven't used a real weapon since then, so there were no real weapons on set. It's the first shoot we've had, which I tell you, it's tremendous relief for all of us. They're as good as, and they look as real, they look like the real weapons. They do all the function. You get gas discharge. It seems as authentic, and it can be, but Jake Gyllenhaal said, it's airsoft, though. No one can get in trouble.
Well, there you go.
Resident firearms expert Guy Ritchie there.
Yeah, I mean, no. To be honest, I mean,
only kidding, no. But there you go. You know,
there's a spectrum, isn't there, of firearms props when it comes to these films. So, and there always has been since the dawn of these movies.
Of course.
So, recently, I had the pleasure of watching Operation Overlord, which is a big budget D-Day movie.
If you've not checked out Matt's thread on that on the Twitter, it was legendary.
Anyway, they're just rubber guns.
Yeah, so
that's a prime
props.
Example of just rubber prop guns. Then you've got the other end of that spectrum is blank firing live rifles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is what got the tragedy of Rust was that somehow a live round got into the armorer's ammunition store and entered a firearm that was used as a working prop. And then You've got airsoft in the middle, which it probably isn't airsoft. It's probably like the gas blowback rifles.
Yeah,
the
very expensive ones.
Yeah. It's not like
some
electric battery powered ones. And
no, I think there might be a bit of that sometimes.
Yeah,
because someone on Twitter told me that they saw the manufacturer's name of like someone who's got the license for HK who makes AEGs.
Humerex.
That's it. Yeah. So there's that. But then, as you said, you've got the gas blowback ones where I've got a gas blowback M1911, a pistol. And to be fair, if you film someone firing that and put a bit of After Effects on, does a job.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it.
If you pay a good special effects artist to put on some CGI over, muzzle flash, etc., they're loud on set, so the actor's expressions will probably be somewhat realistic. They cycle in a lot of cases. That's good. There is, very notably, you can see in that set piece, that first set piece, where one of the Afghan army chaps that are with the team has a gas blowback AK-74, and he's firing it. And you can see the bolt moving, but they cut away from it so quickly because the bolt doesn't look real and there's no bullets coming out of
there's
it.
There's some bits where...
spent cases as well.
Where like CG spent cases are flying away. And if you're... Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you're not looking for it, you don't notice. But then after I saw that quote, I went back and watched some of the sequences and you can see they kind of all move the same way. And but it's not... It really doesn't take anything away from the movie having these...
This is not something I would criticise heavily because it
not at all. I just thought it was interesting that there were no.
I will criticise that set piece.
Oh yeah,
the way it was choreographed in a moment, but in terms of like the weapons, doesn't really matter.
It's fine.
I did. If you look at the M2 Browning on the Humvee when he's firing it, he's giving it a lot of the shake.
Oh yeah,
he's giving it a lot of the movie shake.
That's a trope in itself. Yeah,
and inside you can see this little reciprocating. What appears to be like an internal charging handle probably is, and you can see it move backwards and forwards.
They've like rigged up a rig
on an actual Browning that you know it would be fully moving. And when a 50 caliber Browning is firing, Rob, it looks like it's firing.
Oh, it judders about a bit.
Just
a bit. But in terms of actual like you know weaponry that is in the film, there's AK-47s galore, AK-74s galore.
Yep.
You know. Any make and model you can think of.
Romanian, German, I think.
Yeah.
Some mock-ups and stuff like that, I think, yeah.
Yeah, the MTP galore, all the allied forces are wearing MTP.
Lots of that.
Camo,
Is it MTP? I don't know.
It's like the American version of MTP.
Yeah.
I think it's not.
Yeah. Is it Universal Desert Camo?
Something like that. It looks like MTP to me. I don't know.
I am not a camouflage
expert.
Camo's
post, like, 1970. I don't know. I have to look out for this half the time. Modern. It's not on my bag, really.
That's fair.
But I liked... I did like Jake's little M4 carbine thing that he's running right at the end when he goes back to Afghanistan. That's quite cool. A little stubby foregrip, ACOG sight. Mm-hmm. But I noticed, I don't know if anyone else has noticed this in movie land, when Jake Gyllenhaal has a carbine in any film with a crane stock that you can extend, he never extends it. So he goes for like ultra, like proper, like I'm doing it on him. This is recorded. I'm showing Matt how
this
looks. Yeah,
Rob's doing an impression, but it looks, I know what you mean.
Really tucked in, little
I guess
stuff.
Maybe someone told him to do that once in a boot camp.
He just does it in all the movies now.
Whether it was the intensive 3-day boot camp they went through for this film.
Possibly,
Super intensive.
He did it in Ambulance, and there was another movie where he had a carbine, and he did it in that. But all the way through the movie, he does it. Just interesting little thing that I noticed. Yeah. His drills are good. He's very believable in the role. Got to admit.
Yeah, they're not bad. Not bad at all. Right? I mean,
it's a shame that he's doing it in this film. Like, come on.
I mean, one thing that stood out to me is that the team is all armed with what is supposed to be HK-416A5s.
Yeah.
And they're all mounted with ACOGs as well. And then his secondary is an M9A3 Beretta.
Okay. Oh, yeah, nice.
Neither of which in those configurations were ever adopted by the US.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting.
No, so when it comes to HK-416s, it's a complicated one because obviously SEALs use them, other elements of US SOCOM use them. But I don't think in... that role at that I don't think they're like tier one. I think they're probably just standard SOF. So I don't think they would have had that type of 416. And the M9A3 I don't believe was ever used by any elements of SOCOM. They use Glocks as far as I know.
It's obviously for the uninitiated like that that's just an M4 carbine variant.
You know what? It's cool to see an M9A3. I mean because it's just the standard Beretta that you know the US Army had.
Yes.
Like if you've seen Lethal Weapon, it's the gun that Riggs has.
Nice. Nice to get it back on films there. Nice one.
Yeah. And it has like a little Picatinny rail added to it, and that's one of the main features of the A3.
Cool.
And it's cool. And he hands it over to Ahmed. And it gets used a few times, and it's cool.
Mm.
But one thing I did notice was we get a few through the optic camera shots.
We do. Not having any of them for a while on the show.
Yeah.
Nice little trope there. Yeah, that was quite good.
We get one from the sniper, and we get a few through the lens of Gyllenhaal's ACOGs.
That's nice. The
beginning and the end of the film as well.
We also get gun cam from the gunship at the end.
Oh, that's one of the best parts of the film.
You know, like when, do you remember that whole era where some kid at school would come in with his Sony Ericsson phone and he'd show you like a gun cam footage and someone had sent it? Do you remember that era?
Yeah.
It's like
on Live League.
Yeah, like getting an email copied from your mate that's copied to like 50 people, be like, look at this gun cam footage from Iraq or Afghanistan. And I was always like, that's cool, but they're like real people getting killed.
Yeah.
Like Call of Duty.
Well, do you know what? Like, do you know what that scene reminded me of? I remember there was a game on like Apple, and I had it on my iPad years ago, where it was like zombies and you're in like a spooky and you can select the guns and you can like, you have to like defend the entrance to a base.
Oh, wow.
I think it was literally called Zombie Gunship.
Wow.
Correct if I'm wrong.
They're up all night thinking of that one.
But it looks exactly the same as that sequence.
Yeah, it does a bit. Yeah. It's nice to see the inside of the gunship. That's pretty cool.
That was a nice touch. I'll give them that. And that was one of the bits that was like, oh, that's pretty well done. That's kind of cool. Like they even managed to line up the CGI Apache that flies in, going from like external normal camera, like camera angles to inside the gunship.
Yeah, thermal camera. I like seeing the Huey come in to take them away. That was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The PMC.
PMC Huey. / Afghan Security Forces Huey.
Yeah. I guess the Spanish army must still use it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just one knocking around Alicante. There you are. Who's that?
Ahmed has a TT Tokarev towards the end of the film.
Yeah, that was nice to see.
Which he pulls out and puts a few rounds through. I think if I'd been him, I would have saved three of those, knowing that
for everyone else, yeah.
Yeah, knowing the what was going to happen to them when they get...
Yes.
But,
if the gunship hadn't have turned up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my issue with that sequence, right? Where I'm like, you're on foot, my guys. Like, what are you going to do? Like, where's your end game? Like Jake doesn't have enough ammunition on him. Their mate doesn't, and he doesn't. Unless they held me over that bridge.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying.
The ending for me,
I was a little bit like, I know something's going to turn up and help them. I know that. It's a movie, right? I knew they were going to be safe. But in my mind, I'm like, Jake, you are an ex-Marine Special Forces whatever guy.
We don't know what he was.
He's just SOCOM, or whatever he was. Like, you know, my dude.
Special Operations Command. I've realized we've said that numerous times now. We haven't explained what that is. Yeah.
But you would have just been 10 times better off hiding rather than trying to run through this bridge on your own, like with small arms, and you've got like a whole division of Taliban following you.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I know.
It falls apart. It's this horrible thing about this movie. Surface level, you could probably buy a lot of it. But once you start breaking it down, and we will start breaking it down off the Ali Tally section, but it falls apart as a narrative.
Oh, we're still on the Ali Tally. Okay.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, oh, it's just a tangent there.
One last thing. A weird F5 Tiger appears.
Oh, yeah, you were saying this, Bass, on
the beginning
Twitter.
Of the film. Yeah. Like, it takes off at Bagram Air Base or something, and there's a weird... It's not been in US service for quite a while. I don't think anyone operated F5 Tigers in Afghanistan.
Is it just stock footage or something that they found? Possibly.
I don't know what they've done.
Oh, there's also, if anyone hasn't watched it yet, when they go to the Bagram Air Base at the very start, when they cut away from the mission that the guy gets blown up by the IED, when they cut back to the air base, when Jake is having like the briefing by his commander, there's some extras marching, quote unquote, in the edge of shot.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And they're all out of step. And they're all doing their own thing. And I'm like, if it's me on set or the military advisor, I'm like, you can just have them walking through. They don't need to be in formation.
I don't think you march on a flight line anyway.
It just looks weird.
Why would you march on a flight line? Unless you're like embarking on a transport aircraft. Why are you marching just parallel to everything that's going on?
But just because how disjointed the extras were, it just caught my eye and I couldn't I couldn't help
at that point.
I could
rivet count on stuff, but I'm not going to, because at that point I kind of like I just turned off to all I'd the switched. Nuanced bits that I'm like, that doesn't really make any sense. I don't want to expend the mental power that I need to catalogue. That doesn't make sense. Why are they walking there?
Matt had a running commentary of me texting him all this when I for on our WhatsApp group when I was watching it. So he's had it twice.
I have.
Oh Christ. Maybe we should favourite scenes, or are you done?
Let's move on to favourite scenes.
Hello, Robbie here. Did you know you can support the podcast on Patreon? Join the supporting cast today and gain access to exclusive perks, such as discount codes, our monthly Patreon film votes, and the chance to get exclusive merchandise before anyone else. Search Fighting on Film on Patreon or find the link on our website. Thank you. Now back to the show.
So I think the first thing we should do is we should break down that first firefight a little bit.
Okay.
Also, why were they doing a roadblock? Like vehicle check. They're special forces.
Special forces.
Why are they doing that? That's like Afghan National Army, Afghan National Police, and US standard infantry.
It's my whole thing about them being vague as fuck, right? And it doesn't help how vague they are. Because roadblock, right, okay. Then they're finding an IED factory when you just call a gunship in a blow to shoot fuck out of it, really, or call air support and get them to deal with it. Because there's only like what, six of you or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a bit, yeah. So
you would set up an OP and you would watch that base and find out whether they are actually moving.
Yeah,
stuff
and Ahmed's
out
already
there.
Told
you wouldn't just walk into it.
Yeah, Ahmed's already told you that you're in a bad spot anyway. But then the whole thing of the relationship between the two characters not ringing true. Where why would you? Yes, if you're Kingly, you've done tours of Afghanistan before. Yes, you know X, Y, Z about the area. You've been there. You've seen it. You've done it military wise. But you're still going to trust your interpreter who lives there and lives with these people and knows these people probably better than you do culturally, you know, neighborly, everything like that. You're still going to listen to him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's the whole thing that it falls down where I never feel like they actually have a relationship that is worth saving.
No. And
you know?
Yeah, the interpersonal scenes between them
don't ring true.
There isn't a scene before, you know, they all become all brotherly.
No,
where
there isn't anything
there's
like
anything
that.
Between them genuine. It's either Jake Gyllenhaal being like, Ahmed, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you doing that?
Exactly.
And then finding out why he's doing that and then going, don't ever do that again, but well done.
Yeah.
And then walking away.
It's this quippy bullshit they have between each other that some Ritchie films do in lieu of actual characterization, where just because characters are quippy to each other, it means they must like each other. But these guys are meant to have this strong as AF bond. So that a man who's clearly dealing with some severe PTSD feels like it's a good idea to go back to Afghanistan on his own and rescue a man on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Like the friendship isn't strong enough. But anyway, this isn't favourite scenes, but it kind of is. Matt,
anyway, that firefight.
That firefight.
So
yes.
they get some intel and they act on it. And the first piece of that intel turns out to be a clear ambush. So they decide not to do that. So what do they do? They then action the second piece of intel that was, you know, initially going to lead them into an ambush. And then they're surprised when it doesn't go as well as, you know, it should have done.
Yeah.
They arrive at what is literally, I was fucking amazed. It's a quarry. It's the quarry trope, Rob. They filmed it in a quarry.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Alicante quarry or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Because I know we've mentioned it numerous times on the show that when a film needs to do a little set piece where no one's about and blow up some explosions and stuff, quarries are great.
Quarry. It's like Doctor Who in the 60s. Quarry.
Doctor Who in the 60s, Red Beret.
Sweeney. Quarry.
Yeah. half of like British 50s war movies.
Yeah. End quarries. Of, professionals have a fight, it'd be in a quarry.
Quarry.
You know.
Every time. Quarry. And the thing about it is, it's all so formulaic and set up to just kill off everyone in it except for Gyllenhaal and Ahmed. It's so fucking clear that that's what they're going to do.
A mile off. The minute one guy goes down, they're like dominoes, aren't they?
Oh, it's so weirdly choreographed. So they get in there, they go into the actual building.
Yeah.
Jake Gyllenhaal looks round a door, literally just pokes his head around a door and sees them making an IED vest, like a suicide vest, and some guys are like filming a video.
And there's AKs everywhere.
Yeah.
Like
and he turns to Ahmed and goes, "We're not going to need you for this bit." And then they go in shooting and shoot all these people.
Well, Ahmed
and then
doesn't have a weapon anyway
because Jake took it off him. And then there's a little war crime and then everyone starts dying. And the war crime bit gets blown over pretty quick because it turns out to be the dude that they spot at the roadblock that they were doing earlier, who they allowed one dude to go off on his own to look at a vehicle and it blew up.
Yeah.
Shocker. Can't believe it.
But I was confused at that point because I was like, I thought the bit at the start would have been like months back. You know,
yeah.
This all feels like it took place in a week. You know,
yes.
Like that's a hard week.
chronology of the film is a little bit
over the show.
Unclear.
Yeah. But my favorite bit of that firefight is where the guy, and I love it when they do it in movies because I'm like, yeah, maybe you would freeze up, but it's comical in how it's done. Where people shout RPG just before they're about to get blown up.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't try and move out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. RPG, bang. Like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. What I don't understand about that bit of the film is the Taliban bring up a little 60mm mortar.
They bring up the mortar. They bring up the RPG. They bring up the technicals. They are absolutely hammering.
They are, but they bring up this mortar and they set it up within like 100 yards. Of the Humvee and all the positions they're mortaring. And it's weird. Like, why wouldn't you just have more RPG? In terms of filmmaking, what I'm thinking is like, why wouldn't you just have like a couple of dudes with like an RPG on the crest firing off?
Popping up. Yeah, I get it.
And that could do all the same damage.
My only thought to that is maybe one of the advisors on the movie, there were two of them, I think, was Mahaley, I think. I think maybe something they might have heard of or something they know. Like if someone somewhere said...
Just wanted to get a mortar in. Yeah, perhaps. So. Just a bit unusual. Because it was almost like that one that's in the Red Beret. Leo Genn takes him out with a grenade. Because he's literally set up like 8 feet from him.
I mean, it's cool to see a little knee mortar. You don't really see him these days. It's cool to see him.
Yeah, fair enough.
That was the least of my concerns was the mortar, but no, I get it.
But as I was saying, that scene where they put the wounded Taliban guy that was at the roadblock out is a little bit rushed. There's obviously not going to be repercussions to that in that scene.
No.
But there's not there even like a shock. There's not even like a look of recognition between Gyllenhaal and the guy that did it. Mm. They could have cut to Ahmed being shocked, be like, oh,
yeah. Wow. Well, he just seems chill. That's like his character. Like, he just lets stuff wash over.
He is chill.
Him.
Yeah.
He's just chill about it all.
He tosses him an AK and he's like, you ready to go?
Yeah. And maybe this leads into, and your favorite scene, quote unquote, leads into my favorite scene, which is,
well, that's good.
Yeah, which is actually, and I thought it, I like it, then I don't, so it makes sense.
Okay.
So after that scene, everyone's dead. They have to escape because the main route of in and out is blocked by, you know, hundreds of Taliban fighters.
Yeah, but the QRF's coming, Rob.
Quick reaction force is coming.
Why didn't they just like?
It's coming.
Wait for that.
They're like the dragons in Game of Thrones. They're coming. Don't know when, but they're coming. You know, wait till season three and they'll be here. But then they have to escape. And I like that part when they're going through the rough terrain. They're coming down mountains and stuff. The shots are a bit more moody. You get some lovely little drone action shots. It's nice. And Jake's saying to Ahmed, Kinley's saying to Ahmed, look, 2 minutes, they're going to be on us. We're going to have to double time it. QRF's coming, but we have to get over this bad terrain. Are you with me? And he's like, yeah. So then I'm like, oh, cool. They're going to develop this bond, getting back together.
Yeah.
Right. So I was like, this is going to be the main crux of the film now, or the main middle part of the film is going to be them helping each other through this arduous journey to then set up the bond of brothers. And like brotherhood and through war and hard times. Oh, yes. No, Jake gets captured 2 minutes later.
Yeah, because Ahmed wasn't there.
And then Ahmed gets him back.
Did I miss something? But where was he?
I think he might have been hiding. I don't know. He just turned up. But that was my whole thing. It missed its cue.
The way that bit's choreographed is there's some nice bits. They're going through gullies. They're clearing gullies. There's a bit where they like tag team a guy and like let his throat. That's wholesome. A Taliban sentry. That's nice, right?
You see a bit of brutality. You know, Jake knifes a guy to death and he looks like it's the last thing he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
But he does it. And then, you know, he's complaining at Ahmed, like, where's your gun? And he's like, oh, I left it up there when we fell down. He's like, you need to have another one. And he gives him his pistol.
Yeah.
And there's all these little instances where, oh, you're going to build a relationship, come on. And then they don't. And then Ahmed gets him back through Afghanistan on his own. And you see the hardships he had to go through. So Ahmed's gone through the mill. And then we forget about him for the rest of the movie. He's literally a plot device after that. And it really, really irritated me.
Yeah, Ahmed literally drags high Jake Gyllenhaal across most of Afghanistan in the middle of the film.
Risks his own life, risks, you know, Jake, you know, sells things of his own, you know, goes without food, makes sure he's got everything he needs.
Takes risks of talking to people and revealing that he's with an American.
Exactly. You know, that whole bit is really interesting, yet it's montaged, which really fucking annoyed me as well. Another wholesome bit
where they bond is where they're both smoking the opium.
Oh, that's quite good, yeah. You know, they've actually got stuff going on, but it's not enough.
Jake's been shot twice. He's groggy. He's on a sled. Ahmed literally builds a giant sled to drag him across country.
He's been through the mill, this lad, you know. But yet, after that, all his exposition is spoken by other people on his behalf. He becomes MacGuffin.
Physically, within that section, Dar Salim's great.
Oh, yeah, I believe he can do it. I believe everything about him.
His expressions, the way he does it, the way he moves. It pays off well.
And then it doesn't seem like the same person.
Yeah.
Like, they felt like there were scenes missing. For a film that is new...
Do you know what I think that is, the issue there? Because we cut away to about 15 minutes of frustrated Jake trying to get through to the Department of Defense, the State Department, and get that visa. And it is 15 minutes of him being back at his automotive workshop that apparently he owns.
But he is a written out of the army.
Yeah,
they don't establish
maybe
that.
Maybe he's on leave. I don't know. Anyway, so he's phoning people drunk, shouting at them and stuff.
I'll find you. Don't put me on hold again.
Yeah. I mean, I understand what they're going for in that.
Yeah.
And this is another thing. This is another thing that the film reaches for but doesn't quite get.
Exactly.
Because at the moment, there are a lot of former US and other ISAF nation servicemen.
Pick a nation,
who are working really hard, tirelessly, to get people that they serve with, that were Afghan interpreters and people from the Afghan National Army, visas to get out of Afghanistan. And I feel like they're trying to show that frustration. But, you know, there's been New York Times articles, Washington Post articles about, you know, the
FBS put stuff on YouTube about it.
Veterans trying to get people out of Afghanistan because, you know, they were promised a visa and they didn't get it, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the film reaches for it, but I don't think it hits it.
It doesn't grasp it.
It doesn't have the balls to set it after the major withdrawal. The
actual withdrawal.
21.
Yeah.
Because it's set in like 2018, 19, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, as far as I know.
Well, yeah, it feels like it. And then I'm like, well...
Well, it says 2018 at the beginning of the film.
Yeah. But then I think it just wants the plot to be muddled near the end a bit. I think it wants to be.
Well, it does. And it does mention it in a postscript.
Okay.
It does mention the withdrawal there. But you could have crafted a film that actually deals with the evacuation and the repercussions of America's withdrawal from Afghanistan 100%.
And
as the backdrop of this. But they don't do that. And it kind of lacks for it.
It does. That's why I likened, I said at the start, I wanted it to be more Argo than Rambo. Because Argo, even though Argo messes its actual facts and it makes it movietizes things for convenience for film, that shows how you get people out of a really bad and difficult situation.
Through
bureaucracy and through, you know, and showing the hardship of it. This one thinks, well, no, you can just hammer at a door till it breaks because we're in the army and we're special forces and we've got guns and I'm Jake Gyllenhaal going through the mill and this man, I owe this man, it's a debt. It becomes like a transactional thing. Like, I know we're kind of in final thoughts. I think it's going to take up a big part of the show anyway this week, but
it's going to be fluid.
It's going to flow in. But they boil down someone who clearly is struggling with what happened to him in his brain. You know, PTSD.
Doesn't even remember everything that
doesn't
Hammond
remember
did.
It all. You know, he
until he starts having some flashbacks.
Yeah, he's annoyed that the US media are portraying him as some kind of superhuman soldier who did it all on his own. So that he's annoyed at that. But then it becomes this whole thing of, oh, well, it's a debt. I pay my debts. This man got me back. It becomes really transactional. Like the movie almost treats it as if, so if Jake Gyllenhaal goes back and gets his interpreter out of Afghanistan, then his post-traumatic stress will be cured because that's the end of the transaction. It almost feels like it wants to say that's how it works. And I felt that was really cheap.
Interesting.
And almost a little bit, it felt cheap and cold to boil down what you're actually doing and what the hardships that so many Afghan, not even just interpreters, just anyone who worked for the coalition or ISAF went through and still is going through under the Taliban's new regime, to boil it down to, don't worry, Jake Gyllenhaal will come back and save you, like a kind of white saviour thing.
There's an element of that.
I was like, please don't,
Just to make the point that I was going to make, but then we tangented.
Sorry.
Which we always do. Is tangented a word?
Yeah. We let off. People don't listen to Farting on Film for the coherency. They listen to it for the amazing war movie takes.
True. So the point I was going to make was that we follow Jake's struggle to get through on the phone to get a visa. And during that entire time, we don't really see what Ahmed and his family are doing and going through.
I was just about to get onto that, but exactly.
We see a little tiny bit, but it doesn't. Yeah. They could have paced it better by interspersing this and ramping up the stakes. Like he's shown moving from one safe house, great, but they could have had numerous little sequences of where that's happening, and they're getting closer, and it ramps the tension and it carries the film a little bit more.
And
they didn't do that.
They forget how it's clearly been months as well, because the wife was pregnant. Now the son's a few months to a year old.
Like 3 months old or something.
So I'm
say.
It's been maybe 4 or 5 months then. in real time. So yeah. I'm like, we needed way more. And I agree with you. I wanted to see like a running narrative of Jake's trying to tell people on the phone how hard it is for Ahmed and his family to survive at the moment because he's on this hit list. And yeah. because he's, you know, he want numero uno bad guy to the Taliban now because of what he's done, like as a folk hero type thing. I yeah. want to see the problems Ahmed's going through. I want to see the issues he's facing. Make him more of a character. He has no agency in this movie, even though he's the thing reason is, Jake's able to do what he's doing.
The thing is, I know that Afghanistan was in a mess before the withdrawal, but they make it out like there's no possible way for him to have managed to be smuggled to Bagram or Kabul or somewhere where he could have gotten out.
Surely he knows people.
He has to be underground in an area that is completely saturated by Taliban.
It makes more sense if it's post-withdrawal. That's the problem. It does. I don't have an issue with it being the way that it goes if it was post-withdrawal, because I think the movie wants you to forget how bungled that withdrawal was, and for good measure, because we did.
That gets clouded by the fact that that Parker, the PMC, the contractor dude, is still in country.
Yeah, exactly.
And another thing that annoyed me was, you know, Gyllenhaal knows what Afghanistan is like. He's served there for years, done multiple tours. But for some reason, he thinks that wearing Western clothes or just putting a headscarf on is enough for him to just walk through towns and villages.
He looks like a tour guide. He just looks really out of place. And then him meeting back up with Ahmed, you don't even get like a big moment of them going, oh my God, you're here. He's just like really cool about it. Like too cool for school. And I'm like, no. If my mate had left me in a war-torn country and I could be killed at any moment because of what I did for my friend, and my friend came back to help me, you better believe I'm giving him a big hug. And being like, thank you for coming.
I mean, granted, you can't do that on the street.
I know, but they'd never have that moment anyway.
Yeah, you could have. There was a way you could have done that for sure.
I don't even think he says thank you. Or I don't even think they have a moment like that, do they?
There's the scene on the transport aircraft that they get onto, and he hands him the visa.
Oh,
which
yeah.
they bungle that anyway, because there's a passport in there with it, and you don't need a visa if you're giving him a US passport. So there doesn't need to be a US passport in there. It's the visa.
I know what you mean, though. Like, the movie fumbles its message a lot, and I think it annoys me. I don't know why you wrap up this human story in an action, in it like a Guy Ritchie actioner. It just doesn't work for me.
My favourite scene of the film actually is when Ahmed drives up to those hunters that have been in the field for a while, and there's some really nice shots of Afghan hounds, and they're really cute dogs, and that was my favourite scene of the film.
Yeah, fair enough. We like a doggo on the show.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I wanted, if you'd have set the movie at the start where Gyllenhaal's with Ahmed, you don't have to have the bit where you introduce him, just have them together at the start and have them through dialogue be like, you know, set them up that this is kind of Ahmed new to the group. Yeah. And then have that set piece right at the start and have their bond grow, like we said, through that hardship. Then have them separated, then have a bit of Jake trying to get him through bureaucracy, then deciding that he can't do anything other than go. Maybe there's something in there, but I still don't know. I don't know if you can save it.
There is an element of Hollywood seems to be somewhat enamored with this concept of the Afghan withdrawal at the moment. There's another thing the film gets annoyingly kind of tropey with is the exposition scenes, but the bit with where they have like a bit of barbecue and a beer, there's some clunky exposition there where they try and make the team feel like characters that we know, and it almost sort of starts to work, and then they kill
him. Yeah, and then they kill him off again. It's so weird. I just don't get it. Like, it just doesn't work for me. Like, I found it a little bit insulting that it would try and make the audience not remember how things went down in 21, because it was so well publicized. The fallout was incredible. Like, you know, the way that it went down, and we still know that we've wronged these people, because if we hadn't have wronged these people, they wouldn't be making these movies to try and almost whitewash it. I kind of think that, you know, look at how Vietnam was treated after. We've got all these movies that are trying to deal with why and how we did it. You know, rather than...
I think it's too soon.
I think it's way too soon to be making these movies.
Too soon to be making movies like this about this sort of thing. I don't think...
But then they were making first World War movies. We've had time to gestate.
That's true.
So, you know.
Give it another year or two at least, lads. Like, yeah.
You know,
it just doesn't feel...
It feels like it needs to be a limited series set in an embassy or set in a place where the bureaucracy and the actual nitty-gritty of getting someone out of a country is explored through that medium, rather than shooting your way out.
People won't watch it, I'll tell you now.
They might not watch it, but it would be much more interesting and human.
Well, it would. It would be much more human. I agree. I think with this film, it goes from Lone Survivor to The One That Got Away to Extraction.
Yeah.
That's what it does. It takes parts of those films, you know, the bit where they're sliding down the mountain trying to escape from the chasing Taliban, to like Ahmed dragging Jake Gyllenhaal across the desert is like Andy McNab. The One That Got Away,
and
which we covered back in the day. And then Extraction, which is he goes in and tries to get them out. And that is exactly the kind of points it's hitting. And it could work, but it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. And you don't have even don't have the money to make the set pieces look fantastic. So you don't really have the money.
I will say, though, that for 55 million, they do a decent enough job. Like, that's low budget.
Or it could look a whole lot worse.
There's parts of that where the bit on the dam at the end, I thought, oh, this isn't bad. There were some bits that were stupid, like the Taliban were very close to them. And just like milling around.
I want to see how the Ungentlemanly Warfare film goes now. Because I hope this is Guy Ritchie doing a studio a favor so he can get a movie made that he wants to make, i.e. Gentlemanly Warfare. It seems more like you can get more Ritchie-isms in there. Because I really like The Gentleman. I really like Lockstock. I love Snatch. They are great films. So I just don't think this movie suits Ritchie.
Yeah, it's not one I would have pegged him for, I'll be honest.
No.
It really doesn't seem like something
it seems
he'd
a little
go
bit
for.
Like stunt casting for a director. We need a name to attach to this project. Oh, Guy Ritchie's on our books. Perhaps, I don't know, smacks a tiny bit of that for me.
Who knows? Maybe we're being a bit too cynical there, but...
Maybe
yeah.
we are, but it felt like it a little
just,
bit.
To sum up my thoughts on it, as I said, it's Lone Survivor, One That Got Away, Extraction, melded into one.
Yes.
And it could have been done better. It just could have... It just feels like one of those films where you watch it and you think, I see what it's trying to do, but it's not quite getting there. And at the same time, some of those set pieces were quite flat.
Yeah.
And I just don't think the script gave the actors the room to make that relationship. And definitely a detriment.
100%. The film needs way more room to breathe with its characters. You actually need the two leads to feel like they are actually care about each other, other than... And it just my whole issue.
There were some nicely composed shots, though. I forgot to mention. I liked that bit when Ahmed and Kinley meet.
Mm-hmm.
I've been calling him Jake the whole way through.
I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
Meet for the first time, and Jake is sat in the Humvee, and he's in the mirror. He's framed within the mirror, the wing mirror of the Humvee, and Ahmed is stood just to the side of it, and he's telling him how. I was a mechanic. Gyllenhaal asks him, what's that? And he goes, that's an engine. And he's like, are you sassing me? And he's like, no, sir, I'd never do that. And that was good. I thought, okay. Yeah, that's a weird way of approaching.
From there, though, that's
it's a weird
problem.
Way of approaching this.
Yeah,
you know, like that's a weird way to introduce characters, because that can't be the best way of meeting an interpreter that you're going to have to trust with your life.
It's that Richieism of like the quipping and the funny dialogue, but the funny dialogue and the quipping doesn't fit this very
serious
situation.
Yeah. I agree. You
know, that's why I'm very interested to see how the Second World War project goes.
Don't think it's going to be anywhere near as serious.
I don't think and it might be all the better for it.
I think we're going to be in territory of Blood and Gold, Zissou. I think it's going to be that kind of movie.
I hope so, because Richie can do that.
Hyper stylized stuff like the Sherlock Holmes movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. He can do
much
that.
Better. Much better. This just felt too by the
really
numbers.
Doesn't fit with him.
Doesn't work for me. As you said, the core relationship that needs to be right for the film to work doesn't work. You know, you've got actors, you've got the guy, what's his name? Sorry, I want to get his name right. You got Dar Salim, good actor. Way better than this movie allowed him to be at any moment, any point. Apart from the montage bit, he has relatively nothing to do.
Flashbacks are good too. Like, you know, the flashbacks of showing him dragging him and stuff.
Yeah, they're great. They're really well done.
It does, again, reiterate that section of the film, which we've already watched. If they'd shown another perspective...
Other
the thing is, they reuse a lot of the same shot angles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just you're watching the same thing again.
Could have had some nice shots of, like, you know, people looking at him, what he's doing.
It could have had him fighting off wolves.
Anything.
Could have had him, you know, bartering for food.
Yeah,
he could have had him, like, trying to lower him down
more
a cliff.
Of,
and it's just, it's Jake's point of view looking, like, down a slope.
Yeah.
He's being lowered down. And those kind of cool little shots could have lifted that montage of flashbacks.
Yeah. But just it's fine. But more of the movie needs to be that
again,
bit. No, but yeah, trying to wrap up, it's a bit of a miss.
Yeah.
I think unless you're a completionist and you must watch every war movie that's ever released, go for it. But I personally, I wouldn't recommend this one really, because I think it's a good idea. It's just executed quite badly.
Be interested to see in 30 years, you know, how like, we all talk about Vietnam War movies in that glut of Vietnam War movies that were made in the 80s. And we talk about the way that they were approached and what they mean for the war movie genre and what they mean for, you know, the popular consciousness around that war. How will films like this one sit in 20, 30 years?
Yeah. And equally, we must admit, we're a British audience.
True.
And our experience of Afghanistan over here as civilians watching it from the news and being historians and researching it, it's completely different to an American and how it's fed back to them and how they receive it. So that's interesting as well.
Interesting. It's a British director doing an American film as well.
About
an American experience. So
100%. So that was The Covenant 2023 on Amazon Prime now, if you want to go away and watch it. Thanks again for listening. As always, you can catch the back catalogue of the podcast on fightingonfilms.com. Don't forget to give us a review on Apple Pods if you listen there, and why not give us a follow as well, and why not come back next week for another war movie review.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.